If this dude had ever had to change a diaper in his life, I feel like this would have gone a lot differently.
Oh, yeah.
Larry doesn't change diapers.
I'm just now seeing his mugshot.
No, you've never seen that? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I've
seen
never
it before.
Seen it for what?
But I think what it is, when you scroll down the wiki page, you get past all the divorces, and then bam, the very first image is mugshot when he was already on divorce 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yep.
Close to number 5.
Yep.
What was he arrested for in Miami?
Grand larceny by a former business partner.
Nice.
Ooh.
Again. Why are you doing this much?
So, well, actually, Spencer, this is when he got fired from WIOD. So perhaps these things were, perhaps these were connected. Perhaps this is what led to the infamous night at the track.
That's it.
Orlando, you're on the air.
This man's entire life just makes me so fucking tired. Oh my God. Why would you do any of this? He had a heart attack in 1987.
That just tells you that heart attacks aren't real.
He had a heart attack in 1987, and I'm pretty sure he had like 5 wives after that. Slow the fuck down, dude.
He's had 2 entire marriages since
why?
Then.
Why? Why would he slow down now?
So two of these marriages only lasted 1 year.
So the
my year with Larry.
The mugshot. I had to go to the accuser's website, the accuser's Wikipedia page to figure out what it was about. This dude was like big in the world of finance and like one of the first corporate raiders. And apparently Larry King tricked this man into giving him $48,000 to influence President Richard Nixon's incoming attorney general into reviewing a past conviction this dude had. Like, he told this extremely wealthy man, give me $4,800 and I will get Nixon's AG to pardon you?
Is there some kind
you?
Of tax thing where it was like below $5,000 and he didn't have to report it or something?
No, because that's $10,000. So it would have like...
No, I'm wondering if it was different then.
Oh, the reporting requirement?
Because like 48 is weirdly specific.
That just feels like Larry King being like 50's too greedy. 48.5. Okay. That's what I'm.
No, let me tell you.
I'm a man of the people.
Let me tell you about Larry King and greed under the legacy entry. Okay, which is this: that on 2 occasions, Larry King has told Conan O'Brien that he wishes to be cryonically preserved upon death.
Yep.
What is like Conan is responsible for this?
Actually,
or is this when he was on Conan's show, or was he like assigning Conan to
he
this?
He actually had a dinner with friends to tell them that he was really, really keen on being cryonically frozen
I'm sorry,
and preserved.
Read the friend list.
To read the friend list and then we can hang up.
Okay.
Which is, the friend list is, at this dinner with the following. Larry's close friends, Conan O'Brien, Tyra Banks.
Did you say Tira?
Tira.
Shaquille O'Neal.
That's
McFarlane.
I think you mean Shaquille.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Seth McFarlane.
Shaquille's what?
Jack Dorsey, Quincy Jones, and Russell Brand.
Oh.
Now, Quincy Jones, I could see Larry hanging out with because they're both insane.
Sure, Russell Brand as well.
Yeah.
But he was like, I gotta have Shaq. I gotta have Family Guy. I gotta have Twitter, Jack.
Tyra Banks.
So mad at
Banks.
You.
Jesus
so
Christ.
Mad at you. I'm so glad that's not in the show.
The Shutdown Full Cast.
Better.
You're listening to the internet's only college football podcast. I'm Spencer Hall, and I want to tell you about the only man I know who's made 2020 work. The only person who has taken all of that opportunity that you've had, staying mostly at home for 7 months, or deciding that biology and epidemiology isn't real and just giving up. That might be you too. But the only person who's taken advantage of all this time and made their dreams come true. Yeah, we're going to talk about the weekend that was in college football. But before that, I want to celebrate somebody who really has decided to embrace human potential and take all that spare time and do what they wanted, follow their dreams, and make them manifest in the material world. Jason Kirk, would you like to hear about the one person I think who's done this?
So at first, when you said my name, I was like, wait, you cannot possibly be describing me.
I am. Jason, yeah. Are you Jetpack Guy?
Jetpack Jason.
So since when you say the person who has it all together in 2020 and then you say my name, clearly these are two different people. So I would like to hear about this other person who does have it all together in 2020.
A clever way of denying that you are Jetpack Guy. It's incredible.
Nazis are back, and so is the Rocketeer.
Just in time. Yeah. So, Dateline, October 14th, 2020. L.A. International Airport officials are investigating reports of someone wearing a jetpack in the flight path. The second such report in little over a month.
When you say wearing a jetpack...
A jetpack.
No. When you say wearing a jetpack, wearing or operating?
They saw a man in a jetpack. That's the quote I have.
Was he walking?
No, he was at 6,500 feet.
There we go.
Above the ground. And was reported by a China Airlines crew member.
That's where this starts to feel like a work, frankly.
Was this early in the morning? Was this maybe late at night when somebody was trying to be discreet? Maybe low-key? Nope. The China Airlines crew member reported seeing what appeared to be someone in a jetpack roughly 7 miles northwest of the airport around 1:45 p.m. on a Wednesday, according
to
the FAA.
Right after lunch when everybody's sleepy.
That's he waited until I was like, oh, you can't jetpack on an empty stomach. You can't get up to 6,500 feet. That's the thing. Not only has this person done this twice in the last month, they were at 6,500 feet. That's over a mile off the ground.
The Rocketeer is a criminally underrated film and should have gotten the love and extended universe that is today granted to Marvel Comics.
Agreed, 100%. And Timothy Dalton deserved the work.
Joe Johnston is a god.
But damn, like, that's not... I don't know what the acceptable level of off-the-groundness is here for your jetpacking. I just know that a full over a mile, that's too much. That's way too much. But he did it, and that's what matters.
So it looks like
that we know about.
So 6,500, is that what you said?
Yeah.
So I searched jetpack altitude record. It looks like this is sort of a speedrunning thing we have going on where the record is just falling constantly because Google says 5905 was the record, 6,000 the record. All of these articles are from 2020. So like a bored nation is devoting its time to crushing the jetpack record over and over again.
I'm so glad that our nation's uncles have finally had enough time in their homes and have now taken to the skies.
Well, you say.
So let's be clear. We don't know this is a dude, but this is a dude, right?
Yeah, it's a dude.
Maybe, but isn't that what a lady doing it would want you to think?
Shh.
I'm sorry.
So, a company called Jetpack Aviation says it can reach 15,000 feet. So we've
no,
got
it can't.
We've
sure
got a long
can.
Way to go.
15.
Sure, it can.
I'm not actually clicking on any articles at all, because fuck that. I'm just looking at like the previews in Google. So 15,000 feet, that's the bar. Get on it. If you're only doing 6,000, you are not maximizing your potential whatsoever.
Yeah, LAX Jetpack Uncle, if you're listening, Jason just dropped a challenge to you.
Well, Spencer, you say 6,500 feet is too far, right?
I think anything over 15.
But what if I tell you
over
that...
15 or 1,500?
15 feet.
Okay.
What's gotcha. The point of having a jetpack?
To dunk.
So I can just
that's
buzz
it.
Around.
So
I can buzz around your heads like a moth.
Where's
just going,
this?
Whoa!
Okay, never mind. That is funny.
What if I told you that 6,500 feet was still a good sight off of Bo Nix's passing total last year? 6,500 feet is 2,166 yards. And last year, Bo Nix... passed for 2542. So this jetpacker, who you're so impressed by, is still 1,200 feet away from true freshman Bo Nix's rookie passing total.
Is Bo Nix the true Rocketeer?
Is Bo Nix the jetpack bandit?
Meanwhile, Case Keenum did hit 15,000 feet three different college seasons.
See?
Saying.
Good Lord. What do you do? I mean, we could talk about Bo Nix, and I would love to. I would just like to put this.
I'd rather talk about jetpacks.
In your mind, if you were up 15,000 feet in a jetpack, there is no way your mind's going to be right. Because you're going to look at it and go, I've gone far too high in a vehicle supported only by rocket boots. And what I would like, I know this isn't what it actually runs on, but I just imagine that if you're an uncle in a jetpack, it's running off a couple of propane tanks that you got at the gas station.
Right.
And do you really know if they're actually full?
They felt full, but I can't know.
Yeah, that's
God, that's exactly. That is such a dad response. Oh, they felt full.
Yeah.
Is any sort of defense.
Be up there in the air and be like, oh, I really wish I hadn't made burgers with these before.
So
I really could use that little extra.
Around 15,000 feet is when oxygen is only about 50% of what we are used to here. So once
just
you're
like
up there,
Bo Nix's completion rate.
it's a solid 54, sir. around there, you're getting the good thoughts. Your brain your brain is working twice as hard.
All right, so uncles with impaired judgment have taken to our nation's skies. I can't imagine
also,
a better end to the year.
Monarch butterflies can fly 11,000 feet. Are you going to let a fucking butterfly outsoar you?
Jason, calling out the Rocket Pack community. Love to hear it.
That's what's going to happen. Some guy's going to be like, I ain't no bitch-ass butterfly. I'll go higher than that.
And at 15,000 feet, you're so far away, you can't see South Carolina beat Auburn. It's just like a little speck down there. You don't have to watch it.
That's a compelling argument.
I'm just saying, if you had to say what kind of fan is going to LAX and firing up a jetpack for fun, disgruntled Auburn fan feels very on brand.
I don't know, Ryan. They have that big old Jumbotron at Jordan Hare Stadium. they could see that some bitch from space. That would be if they were losing at home to South Carolina. Of course, they lost in the other place, but in about 70 years, they'll get their revenge chance at Jordan Hare Stadium.
First time, but not the last time, Auburn fans are going to lose in that other place in their lifetimes.
You're descending from 15,000 feet. You come down through the clouds and behold the glory and the majesty that is our blessed Mother Earth. And yet, the first thing you see is a stadium full of fans, the faint sounds of sandstorm wafting up from it.
No,
right?
You hear that chicken scream.
And then you hear the... And you know what you're doing, Jetpack Man?
Back to space!
You know what sandstorm sounds like at that distance? It's not that different from a sputtering propane engine, is it?
But you might die, Randy. Oh, it'd be better than landing there.
Can I talk for just a moment about the literal notion of Earth is our mother and how sick of our collective shit she must be?
Yeah.
Like, we say Mother Earth a lot, but think about the notion of mother, not in the Gaia all-embracing Mother Earth sense, but think of it as the Mother Earth who is on her 8th load of laundry and her 60th hour of work, and it is Wednesday.
And all of a sudden, somebody on Memorial Drive in Atlanta throws an entire fish dinner out of their window, as I have seen.
In the styrofoam?
Yeah, she's had it.
Yeah.
I regret to inform you, I think this is more of a Rose for Emily situation.
So, I think this is a good, that's an excellent segue. Ryan, you gave us like 4 segues. That's amazing.
I did my best.
You know, you're like a figure skater who's had to take a shot of Novocaine like right before the competition. So you're trying to get in all the axles before the painkillers wear off.
Yeah.
You did. You gave us like 4 attempts to talk about Auburn, South Carolina smoothly.
Also, you look beautiful in Lycra.
You do.
Hey, thank you.
And like a kid who refuses to pee and then pees themselves in the back of the car because I didn't like the look of that exit. Yeah.
I like how you switched to first person in the middle of that metaphor.
We skipped all of them. So, I don't know. South Carolina, Auburn. Let me just say this. Bo Nix, I don't think Bo Nix should throw the ball 47 times in one game. He probably shouldn't throw the ball 47 times in two games.
We've been joking for weeks about the side effects of Bo Nix, but I'm a lot more worried about the direct immediate effects of Bo Nix, the things he's trying to do on purpose.
47 passes is a nearly fatal dose of Bo Nix, okay? If you take 47 passes worth of Bo Nix, dial 911 because your team is in trouble. He threw three picks. You know, there's picks and then there's picks. There's picks that you throw with your whole ass off your back foot. And there's picks that you kind of half-ass. Like Stetson Bennett's picks, they were... I'm going to give them like C pluses in terms of zest.
Yes, let's talk about multiple interception quarterbacks such as Stetson Bennett and Bo Nix.
There were a few.
Moving on.
But yeah, I don't think it's like that. Auburn's confusing as hell. If anyone understands what they're doing as a team, please explain it to me, because I just find them mysterious in the bad way.
I tell you what, though, we said earlier in the season that we resented Auburn for throwing their hire Gus / fire Gus cards down on the table so early in the year. They're making it zesty.
This is the very confusing thing about Auburn, by the way.
You have one? Okay.
No. The most confusing thing is that I thought they would work if they figured out a run game. Because the knock on them has been that if they cannot run the ball, then they absolutely cannot do anything else, right?
Right.
Thank you to ESPN Autoplay Ads for interrupting our show. That's a great way to run a website in 2020.
They're a fine company. I think they're great.
Mm-hmm.
No problems. They actually figured out a way to run the ball. I thought that was the fix. I thought that was it. They got Tank Bigsby, who, by the way, you got a running back named Tank Bigsby. You should be way better than this.
Well, how the hell is that guy not at Kentucky?
Tank Bigsby. Well, because his name isn't like Torgo or Tobacco Leaf or
also, he's not shaped like his name.
No.
If he was shaped like his name, he would be at Kentucky.
Okay, fair enough.
He would be. Or Jocko or some weird name that you would only have on a Kentucky team.
Tank Bigsby isn't weird.
It's perfectly normal name in Alabama.
All right.
It's perfect. Tank. It's the third most popular boy's name this year.
Well, as the doctor said, holding up a mirror to the second doctor holding a needle and thread, suit yourself.
Yeah, I thought they figured it out with Tank Bigsby. That was good. No, it was good. It was good.
No, too late.
But I thought they'd figured it out. And evidently not. Evidently, we just needed to, instead of giving Tank Bigsby more carries, we needed to throw the ball 47 times with Bo Nix, who Bo Nix completed 24 of those. 24 of those. So, robust 50% approximate passing. Yeah, it's just, this is making me sad.
And a thing I learned with friend and colleague Caroline Darney, this was the first time. Mostly because they have not played very much in this time span. But this is the first time South Carolina has beat Auburn since Larry King was 13 days old.
Oh, God.
Yep. Now you're thinking about Larry King as a baby.
I think he looks exactly the same, but just with tiny legs, right?
Hello! His first words were garlic. It was very moving. Huh.
I had something dialed up to make us feel better after all that, but the notion of Larry King as a baby has put it directly out of my mind. No, it hasn't. Friends and neighbors, by the time you hear this show on tomorrow, October 19th, we will be less than a week away from our very first Deerdorf and Brandstatter remote in Michigan Stadium home alone call of the year.
Ho, ho, ho!
I will be listening to this exclusively next weekend. And not just because Tennessee is playing Alabama.
You know what I'm most excited for is for everybody who has been watching, everyone else who just jumped onto the football bandwagon a month or so earlier than the extremely prudent and wise, oh so wise and virtuous Big Ten. I can't wait for the Big Ten to come out and look just like everyone else has looked, which is like absolute shit.
What coach are you most looking forward to losing their utter minds as they behold the chaos on the field on a shortened season with shortened practice time. Who is going to handle this the absolute worst? It is really too bad that Mark D'Antonio is gone.
It's going to be Harbaugh.
I was going to say Scott Frost, but all right. Harbaugh's going to be great.
Scott Frost is so emotionless. I don't feel like you're going to get much of a pop there. But Harbaugh? Harbaugh's going to give you a show.
We're going to see some veins in that man's neck that we didn't know previously existed in human anatomy.
Yeah. It's just going to look like just a bunch of ropes and wires. It'll be beautiful. Because he's not ready. He's not ready for Michigan to not be able to tackle, which has been the number one thing. If you said, well, how has COVID-19 affected college football and how college football looks? The inability to tackle and all of that contact and reps and practice that you didn't get because you had COVID. Yeah, that's where it's going to show up. And Michigan has relied a lot on their defense to keep them in games when their offense has, is the word struggle too strong? I don't think so.
Flailed?
Developed on the field before our eyes. Learned, matured. And like all maturation, puberty takes a long time. It's awkward. There's fits and starts and emotional breakdowns.
There's a hair down there.
You'll be a man.
A very disturbing direction.
Who's here to help you through it? That's Jim Harbaugh.
I was going to say, that's the... Okay.
Imagine Jim Harbaugh giving the talk. He's no. got kids.
Nope. Going to go right back to baby Larry King. Thank you.
All right. Suit yourself.
That's a lot. He has a lot of kids, too.
Perhaps somebody should give him the talk.
That's that's how it happens? What have I been doing?
I've been running counter right.
It's crazy.
Oh, now I'm upset.
Yep. You did it.
I did. Just like Jim Harbaugh.
I don't know. Did Alabama and Georgia play this week? Oh, they did. They did.
Woo! Them dogs as hell, ain't they?
Woo! What's that coming down the track? Three rushing.
I don't understand that reference, and I won't respond.
Three rushing attempts in the second half.
God damn it.
That's not quite accurate.
It's not, but...
It should be pointed out, though, that, by the way, that in case you wondered whether Georgia was going to actually not panic and freak out, in case you wondered if they were going to keep their composure and stay in the game and stick to the plan, hell no! They lost the lead after Jalen Waddle scored a, what I think was a 142-yard touchdown.
That's correct.
It felt that long.
Just a great run by Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, just an amazing throw by Steve Sarkisian. Great pass by him. Great catch by Steve Sarkisian.
Gary Danielson pulled this same shit. Did you hear this?
Same thing.
God.
Just not Jalen Waddle.
I have a different perspective on it now. I think he's doing it to tweak Nick Saban, and I think it's very funny.
Oh, never mind. I take it back. That is very funny.
Giving credit to an assistant.
Speaking of Nick's assistants, we have to talk about the other one.
There is the Kirby?
No, the Brain King.
Oh, the Brain King?
Nick's Brain King.
Pete Golding, the Nick
I'm
Saban.
I'm sorry, I caught you unprepared.
No, the Nick Saban disciple who looks like...
He looks like if you put Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly's characters in Step Brothers
into the fly machine?
Yeah. It would get... He looks like he was assembled from pieces of other people. And it's Nick, so maybe.
Okay, hey. here's what I want you to do, both you, the listener, and you, my fellows on this show. If you don't know what he looks like, pull up a picture of Pete Golding. Now, Jason, how old do you think Pete Golding is?
Hang on, let me pull up a picture of Pete Golding.
Pull up a picture of Pete Golding.
And tell me how old.
Yeah,
just,
we've seen this guy before.
How
old
do you think that person is?
Oh, God. He's younger than he looks. I know that
28.
Much. 35.
Okay. Holly, what's your guess?
28.
31.
Jason was closest. He's 36. That's a 36-year-old man.
Wow.
If I told you that there was a frat brother named Gooch, and I had to ask you to assign a picture to him, you'd pick that picture. That's the guy. Gooch.
Did I ever tell y'all that a guy named Gooch, spelled Gooch, used to be our mayor in my hometown? We had a mayor Gooch.
You did not.
he was a moderate because he was in the middle.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, Pete Golding is the man who I imagine will take the pizza from the garbage if it's still in it in the office, though, because the office garbage cans are clean. You can't just throw away good pizza like that.
Pete Golding, if Michelangelo was a human man, and I mean the Ninja Turtle, not the artist.
Oh, thank you.
Because that one was.
Wait,
Michelangelo,
what?
Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle.
No, wait, back up.
Sorry.
What man?
It's fine. I'm saying Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle would be Pete Golding if he were human.
What about the other
thing? I thought you were turtles. Saying there was a person named Michelangelo for a minute.
No, I would never suggest that.
Yeah, I was with Jason. I thought, like, oh, was there a person who was a Ninja Turtle? I need to know about this.
No.
Yeah, April O'Neil.
Booger McFarlane looks like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. He really does.
He's
Raph.
You can
read Spencer, Booger, when you hear this.
He will not care. I have a feeling Booger is the kind of person who's like, that man is frivolous.
He swole Raphael. Stats are stupid. I hate you.
I have a special toy that I ride around the field.
It shoots pizzas.
Did you guys have that van?
No.
I never did either. I'm over it.
No, you're not.
How did they learn to drive?
How did they have fingers?
I more think that they were in New York. How did they learn to drive?
Oh,
right?
that's completely fair.
Where did they park? Where do you park the Ninja Turtle van?
It was the 80s, so the answer is Queens.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Bill Barnwell.
Yeah. Will they ticket us here? They don't have the cops here. It's great.
Shoot a pizza at him. It's fine.
Shoot a pizza. Cowabunga! You're getting shot with a flaming hot pizza fresh out of the oven would hurt like hell.
Ninja Turtles could have defunded the cops.
Yeah, don't act like that wouldn't actually give you second-degree burns on your face if you just get hit head-on with a pizza.
You think it's hot?
That's only if the
pizza
gets delivered in time.
Yeah, I think you're loading up old pizzas, and I think it's old stinky pizzas.
No, man, you gotta.
They from the animation, they were all very, very.
That's true.
Very melty.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Clearly, like when they're eating pizza as power ups, it almost looks damn near liquid in their hands.
Jason, you're talking about in the 4-person arcade game.
Yeah,
I feel like in every iteration that pizza was a power up for them.
Yeah,
it is very drippy.
No,
it is very
about
drippy.
The melty ones.
It is very drippy. Yeah,
the cartoon it was just like a bucket of pizza,
hot and ready. That's what it is.
Oh my god, the Ninja Turtles created the Papadilla.
No, it was hot and deadly.
Yeah. Because, like, seriously, if they're just out there shooting pizzas willy-nilly at people, they're gonna send some people to the hospital, cost some eyes.
One's going to the emergency, one's going to Little Caesars.
That's the Chicago way. Just go with it.
It's fine.
I would like to go back to the Georgia-Alabama game to point one other thing out about Georgia completely freaking out when they were only down 3 and deciding to put the burden of proof for Georgia's greatness on the backs of their defense? No. They're running backs, all of which are capable of running a 4.5 or a 4.4, squatting 900 pounds, and are all just supernaturally talented. No, they didn't do that either. Maybe their offensive line, made up of giant, angry, country-strong farm boys? No, they declined that, too. They put it all in the back of Stetson Bennett.
Which Stetson Bennett?
Which sounds like a horse, but is not.
Wisely avoiding Stetson Bennett, 1, pretty sure is dead. And 2 and 3, who are out of eligibility. No, Stetson Bennett, 4th, who had at least 3 passes batted down at the line of scrimmage because he's not really tall enough to throw over them consistently. On the road against Alabama, they decided to throw 40 times with Stetson Bennett because that's who you are as a team.
I have a boring math argument for why I think it's more the problem is actually more precise than that.
Ooh.
So I went back and I looked at everything both Georgia and Bama did on first down when the game was close. Like once Bama scored – the 41st point. I didn't look at anything after that.
That's probably smart.
Yeah, because it didn't matter. Georgia passed the ball 14 times on first down and ran the ball 11 times. Their runs averaged 5.6 yards. Their passes averaged 5.1 yards. But a lot of that is off of one throw, a 36-yard gain. So if you take that one away, passing on first down, those other 13 plays, they only averaged 2.7 yards. Now, Bama, on the other hand, is about the same ratio-wise. They had 18 passes and 16 runs. Running-wise, they're actually a little worse than Georgia, but not significantly, 5.37 yards per play on first down runs. On first down passes, 10.6 yards per play. And I think it's boring, but I think ultimately what happened was Georgia was like trying to be balanced on first down in ways that didn't make sense because Stetson Bennett's not Mac Jones and he doesn't have the same, like he has a good receiving core, but it's not quite as good as Bama's. And like, ultimately I think that meant Georgia was off schedule more than they wanted to be. They end up with, Bama ran six more plays in this game overall and had one extra drive, but had five fewer third down attempts. So I think what happened, and I don't have a lot to explain, well, what was Georgia doing on first down passing that wasn't working? But I think because they went in and said, let's keep it balanced and not just run the ball on first down to set up second and six, third and two, et cetera, et cetera. I think they just got behind schedule too much. And that's why they get to third and long. And I think both the last two interceptions, I think, are on third and 10 and third and seven, if I remember correctly. That's my boring math answer.
So you think theoretically they were just doing the thing they were supposed to do?
Well, it's funny because
against,
it is that
all,
thing.
Against all evidence.
It is that thing where, like, when Georgia just runs the dang ball Bobo, some people, maybe people on this podcast, maybe me, who's to say, will kill them and sort of say, like, you know, that, you know, what are you doing? It's 2020, blah, blah, blah. But the truth of the matter is you're on your fourth string quarterback who's still very good, who has played better than anybody really would have predicted. If you said, hey, Georgia's going to start the year with their first stringer who transferred in immediately deciding to sit the season out, their second stringer who transferred in not being healthy enough to play, their third stringer getting benched in the first game against Arkansas, and then they're going to be on to starter number four. Like, he's played well relative to those expectations, but like, I think
he's also starter Bulldog the fourth.
Yes, correct.
That is interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's a matter of you should just do what you're good at. And that doesn't mean don't let Stetson Bennett throw. It just means, like, give him an environment where he will be more likely to succeed throwing. And I don't think that means, hey, we're on the road playing Alabama, you're going to throw the ball a bunch on first down.
Because they were still running for 4.8 per carry. Like, and their offensive line, and a lot of points in the game was looking good. So like,
yeah, they're ready. They were ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. If you can put him in a little bit more favorable positions where he's throwing on third and four,
right?
Yeah,
or even then, like he can, like Stetson Bennett can run. I mean, he looks like Mario, like sprinting, but
Mario can run his ass off.
Yeah. So I think Georgia listened to the full cast too much, frankly.
Yeah. That's a common problem for
that
them.
Goes for everyone who is currently listening to it as well.
Shout out to superfan Claude Felton.
I knew it. Claude Felton, what's a podcast? I will complicate that with one thing.
Okay.
Stetson Bennett missed those easy throws, and he hit the hard ones. Go back and look.
Sure.
Stetson Bennett misses some very, very makeable throws where he is put in a great position to succeed. Then on longer downs where he should miss the throw and they should not convert, he does. That's where this horrible human factor comes in, where you go, boy, this would be great if we did everything optimally.
But that's sort of what I'm stuff. that's sort of what I'm talking about, where the reason the game, I think the reason the game was close and then it wasn't, is because Georgia was just like leaning on that stress too much, where it's like, well, we'll let Stetson Bennett throw on first down. It won't go well. And then he'll bail us out on third down. And that is not actually a way to survive a football game against Alabama.
Or any, or as we'll talk about, against anyone.
You could beat Vandy. Teams. You could beat Vandy that way. Maybe? And you can, frankly, you might be able to beat Florida that way.
And LSU.
Well, we have a, we have a special circumstance on third down as Florida Gators that is familiar to Georgia fans as well. That would be third and Grantham. But I was having a perfectly good night, so I really don't want to talk about that.
Sorry.
That's fine. It's fine.
Can I, don't bring it up again. I think I have a pretty fun rushing average stat that I am looking to confirm. Okay, here we go. The team on pace to have the lowest per carry average on the ground since 2014 Wake Forest. Do we have a guess? The team this season?
Mississippi State.
That's right. Not only do they never run the ball, they are terrible at it when they do. They've done it 70 times per 1.54 yards per carry. That is about the same number as Air Force did in its only game.
God, what a beautiful time.
Mississippi State statistical slander will just continue because it's one of these four games was not like the others.
Do you think you could put two guys on the line and drop everybody back into coverage, like put everybody 10 yards away? And do you think Mike Leach would still refuse to run the ball?
I mean, I'm pretty sure like half the Pac-12 did that for like the last few years, you know, like that's, didn't Washington do that just like for 5 years
right,
in a row?
Right. Yeah.
Was it Jimmy Lake who said out loud, you know, that they love the Apple Cup because Mike never changed anything and they could just do the same thing every year?
Yep. That was him.
Mike Leach had a really good idea in like 1998. And then it was
the same. Kind of makes him perfect for that Joe Rogan vein when you think about it.
It was the sham wow, as it turns out.
Hey, have you ever taken DMT and coached a football team?
Oh, I was saying Joe Rogan's good idea was to be on news radio.
Probably wasn't even his idea, right?
Mm-hmm. You think he just showed up?
He did give me my fantasy football team name for the entire decade or so that I played fantasy football. There was a little throwaway line of his very early on in the show where he was insisting that this video he was watching could not be a scam because it was labeled authentic alien autopsy bloopers.
Oh, well, in that case.
Joe Rogan 2020. Hey, have you seen those authentic alien
autopsy
bloopers?
I know. He has become that which he once derided.
They're crazy, man. They're crazy.
Mississippi State also sporting a healthy minus 10 turnover margin through four games.
Is that like bad cholesterol?
Last year, for reference, the bottom teams, New Mexico State, New Mexico, and Akron, were at minus 15.
Okay, that's different.
Okay. Yeah. Jesus.
Good night. They, I tried to be blasé, and now I just can't shake it. I'm just horrified.
Are they going to win another game?
I think they will.
Who do they? Well, big question. Shuffled schedule. Who do they play?
So their next game is against Alabama on Halloween. So no,
that's one.
That's one.
Wait.
It's in the bag.
Where is that game?
Tuscaloosa. Oh,
okay. God. Yep. Count it. That's one.
Then they host Vanderbilt and Auburn.
That's you'll get one of those two.
And then they then they have Georgia on the road.
That's another.
Then they play Ole Miss on the road for the Egg Bowl, and then they end the season at home against Mizzou.
So
that's
God.
You have to endure the Egg Bowl, and then you have to get up for a game against Mizzou.
Yep.
Where like half the team will be suspended because of whatever they did in the Egg Bowl.
It's like the fucking Egg Bowl fallout. And like, yeah, you've just wrenched your entire psyche through the Egg Bowl, and then
38.
All right, boys, we got a team we hate even more than that.
38 Mississippi State players suspended for pantsing Mike Leach during the Egg Bowl.
We all saw your dick. All of us.
Oh God. What, dude? No.
I think Vanderbilt is the one, like, mostly because Vanderbilt is just like
half a team
at this point.
Like, I think you can get past Vanderbilt.
If they can't beat Vanderbilt, no, then there's not another win on this.
I mean, think of how many shitty teams Mike Leach has beaten while running the ball three times.
Yeah.
Is there what?
Is there a chance? You guys have probably watched them more than I have at this point this season. Is there a chance we get on the schedule where Mississippi State, despite being bad, has a shot to snake up, get somebody by the ankle, and absolutely fuck up somebody's season, which is our favorite thing for them to do?
I don't think so.
I guess what I'm asking of the three of you is, are we beyond that sandbar? Are they too far out?
Oh, they're too far out.
Yeah, okay. There's only like 2.5 teams for whom, like, it's Bama and Georgia are the two obvious ones. Auburn is the interesting one. Not because necessarily Mississippi State could snake up.
No, but
and,
because,
like,
it's
bite
way
them.
Funnier when Auburn's season gets ruined, I agree.
Well, and also because, like, Auburn doesn't need you. Like, Auburn is a good improv partner. They don't need you to do that much to make it funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, Auburn is going to, if Auburn loses to Mississippi State, I guarantee you they will have done, they will have carried their weight in that upset.
It's the Bo Nix 9 interception game. Why did you keep throwing?
Oh, so that also brings me to the Egg Bowl, where, like, I'm very happy that Arkansas won. I love what Arkansas is doing this year. I don't know that Arkansas can continue to rely on, like, what was it? Six turnovers?
Interceptions.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
What
it's
makes
looking
you say
a little
that?
Bit suspect.
You think, yeah, you're saying that Arkansas won't get 7 turnovers a game?
They might. If they do, that's great. But the flip side
Ryan,
of that
sounds like a hater talk.
Just Sam Pittman with some sort of huge theatrical Gandalf staff on the sideline going, "Yes, sir! I'm the turnover god!
Oh my god, none shall pass."
I ate at Grandy's for 30 years in a row so I can make this happen! All magic belongs to me!
Let's just say,
yes, sir!
In the computers, Arkansas is showing up like 51st,
yeah,
as in below, well, Indiana.
I was gonna.
Which, nothing wrong with that.
Home field.
Love that. I feel like every single time there's South Carolina, like, best 2 or 3 lost team in the, like, whatever the number is. Once we get up to 7 lost team,
right.
There's the best, South Carolina.
Best winless team.
The best 2 or 3 lost team in the nation's always a matter of, like, best health insurance that doesn't cover surgery.
The best winless team, of course, is Ohio State.
That's true.
Team with no wins.
Oh, can we divert briefly to talk? I noticed something. So we've talked about the poll a lot. I noticed something weird.
Talk about the polls.
We will talk about the polls. There's something weird going on with the poll that I think might, there's a chance, it's a small chance, but I think it might fuck things up later in a really funny way.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Okay.
So the poll has been, as we've talked about previously, including Big Ten and Pac-12 teams, even though they're not playing. Now that said, not everybody who is an AP poll voter is putting those teams on. Like, I think Brett McMurphy is only ranking teams who are playing. So,
bless,
like,
bless you, man. Bless
so there's already some weirdness in the poll where, like, some voters are doing one thing and some voters are doing something completely different. But how many Group of 5 teams do you think are on the most recent AP Top 25?
Quite a few.
It's 5.
That's a lot.
And wow. if you look at, like, week 5 of the last 4 years, which is, like, the rough equivalent of where we are in terms of, like, how many games people have played, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like 3, 1, 2. Like, if you don't have that many teams on, Group of 5 teams in the top 25, and you don't, like, Cincinnati is still in the top 10. Do you know how, like, what that's on the strength of? They beat an FCS team that Pitt beat 55-0. They beat 1-4 USF. And they have a good win over Army, but that's it. And that's good enough to be in the top 10 right now because things are so weird.
I think the Cincinnati ranking, which, like, yeah, the computers are like 15th. This is like their second best ranking ever.
Right.
And I think it is all misdirected Midwestern energy. Like, we got to go vote for somebody from the Midwest who has done something. And it's
also
Cincinnati.
Wow. I wonder if we could see, I would love to see like a geographical data breakdown of this.
Oh, yeah. And I would love for one of these to bump out like Ohio State at the end. Like, mm-hmm. Ohio State lost to Purdue. So not real sure whether we could put you ahead of BYU or Cincy.
So my question is this, by having the season be staggered as it has, and giving essentially giving space for the voters to put good group of five teams like Coastal Carolina in the rankings where they previously would not, like, they just wouldn't have gotten in, or they would have had to go like 8-0 instead of 4-0 and 5-0 to get in. Mm-hmm. Is that going to create like an inertia of sorts where it's already in people's minds that like Cincinnati's 9, and so, yeah, maybe I can drop them a spot or two below that, but I like have they like gotten a foothold that will pay off down the road where we're gonna see like at the end of the year, like, oh shit, there are like 3 group of 5 teams in the top 15. What the hell is going on?
See, that'd be really stupid, so I say yes.
Okay.
It's difficult to predict, but I mean, like, since Cincinnati, they did drop since last week because of Texas A&M's victory over the team that doesn't run.
Yeah.
So, like, it could be sort of shifting a little bit. Like, UNC lost, and Cincinnati still moved down.
Yeah.
You know, it's just weird shit's happening. So, like, it could go either way. The fun one will be if we make it to college football playoff rankings, because they actually don't give a shit about what the AP says, you know? And, like, every year there's, like, the big correction when the AP just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess we'll cheat off that test now. You know, like, oh, the actual answers are here. Let's align with that. So, like, this year, it could be big. Like, it could just be just big jumps all over the place. Like, Oklahoma State, number 6. Don't get used to that, please.
12. Now you're 12. Why? You did nothing wrong. Too bad.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the biggest aberration on here might be BYU in the teens still.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Based on everything we've seen, this is an easy top 10 team so far.
All right. So that was the weird thing I noticed. Here's the funny thing. The Big Ten has more teams in the top 25 than the SEC does right now. That's it. That's the whole joke. That's the whole joke.
So I think the takeaway here is to just never play football.
No, that's it. Listen,
no, it's bad for you.
The theme across the board, by the way, is just try less.
I also
do less.
On the official AP page, Coastal Carolina, they're new here. You know, they don't have – all these teams have links and logos, except for Coastal Carolina because they're brand new here, never been ranked before. It's very exciting. Also, NC State, they also don't have a logo because, you know, they're not really up here all that often. I don't know. They might have not needed one ever since the internet was invented. But exciting names all throughout the AP 25.
This is what I'm waiting for, by the way, which is the SEC has managed to fall behind the Big Ten in total number of placed teams based on their actual proof of life. Oh, you're playing football. Let's see what that looks like. Ew. Oh, no. God. Let's keep these other teams that we have magically put in with some kind of the buoyancy of forgetting that we've forgotten that you're actual football teams. I cannot wait for the Big Ten to come in and saunter in and go, all right, you ready for some big boy football now? And Illinois, like, takes the field and we go, oh, God, it's Illinois. Oh, I forgot how bad this looked.
So this time around, Ohio State moved up, Penn State moved up, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota all moved up. Minnesota leapt a healthy 3 spots because of, you know.
Off of what?
Meanwhile.
Off of nothing.
The Pac-12, their Pac-12. Only team in the top 20, Oregon, went down a place.
Okay, so this
Oregon is plummeting, and Wisconsin will overtake them at this rate.
This gets to my next step in this grand plan, which is this. Yeah, Ryan, I think that will happen. I think there will be some stickiness. There's going to be over-speculation in this particular market on Big Ten futures. And by the time the Pac-12 starts playing football, they're going to look so heinous, unprepared, and sloppy that there will not be a ranked. Like, we could see a situation where there might be one ranked Pac-12 team in the top 25 at the end of the season just because everybody's gone, oh, God.
We're close to it now.
By the time this happens, the Pac-12 will look so bad that we will want football season to end. Oregon State versus Cal, like late at night or at 9 in the morning, whenever it happens. By the time that happens, we'll all be so appalled. We'll be like, yeah, the season should end. We shouldn't be doing this. This is awful. They have 14 turnovers.
There are only five Pac-12 teams getting votes in the poll right now.
Dear God.
A poll that is that is still giving Tennessee votes.
I told them not to do that at the beginning of the year, and maybe now y'all will listen to me.
The Washington Huskies and the Utah Utes, fairly successful programs in recent times, are behind Liberty.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, I am still going to go ahead and say that in the apocalypse year, that Utah football is going to thrive because they've tried less and won more than any, like, in terms of ambition, in terms of what they're going to do on the field, right? Like, what do? We throw rock.
Oh, I found my favorite one. So Indiana, when the Big Ten rejoined the polls like 3 weeks ago, Indiana had no votes. Last week they had one vote. Shit, yes. Indiana had one vote. Now, Indiana has moved up to four votes.
Exponential growth, oh, baby. Yes. Next thing you know.
So it's 16, right? And then 64. And then, you know, further math. Next thing you know, they're in the top 15. Let's go.
Cove, Indiana.
People.
Oh, my God, Ryan.
They're contagious.
And, this week's Indiana,
catch
by
it.
The way.
Oh, my God, the Indiana fever.
This week's Indiana, the team that just appeared with one vote, is a little school by the name of Texas.
Oh, they're just hanging on.
It's a basketball team.
People treating their votes like their investment dollars in a really hostile investment environment. Going, where's a safe place I could put my vote? I'll forget. Hell, I don't know. Put a couple dollars in Indiana.
No one's
going to over-speculate on Indiana.
See, I see it more like a roulette betting table where people are like, yeah, sure. Put $5 on Liberty. Whatever. I will say, it is a very special indictment of Syracuse football at this point. And they have injuries. There are like reasons for it, et cetera, et cetera. Liberty went to Syracuse, beat an ACC team on the road, and is still like 9 spots back from being like, yeah, no, in a year where like the polls have room for group of 5 teams, Liberty cannot sniff the poll.
I appreciate
Please don't
you
say
using
that.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
I do appreciate you using the phrase a very special indictment when talking about Liberty football.
Are you saying Liberty is on the outside looking in?
Yep.
You know what? Someone put them in the corner and they seem happy there. Oh, boy. I would like to share a tale of two teams, both evenly matched and apparently playing the same football game. And then I will give you the score of this game because I watched this game. I thoroughly enjoyed it because there's, again, do you know who the jetpack guy of the SEC is? I'm about to tell you. Somebody who's maximized their time. Somebody who's optimized themselves for 2020 and the unique circumstances that it has given us. One team had 18 first downs. The other team also had 18 first downs. One team had 294 yards total offense. Not a great day at the office. The other team had 287. Seems like a pretty even football game. Boy, yes, Spencer, that's right. Pretty even football game. 107 yards passing, 112 yards passing. Looking at a defensive struggle here. Were they able to run the ball?
This is
187, 175.
Let him have it.
It's about the same. About the same. What was the final score of this game? If I were to give you, you'd probably go, oh, it feels like 21-17. Maybe 17-14. Kind of a low-scoring, slobber knocker of a game. Classic SEC territory. The kind of game your grandpa would be proud to take a nap in the middle of.
Okay, now it's mean. I defended you for
34-7.
Like
it's 34-7.
It's 34-fucking-7! It's 34-7! Kentucky 34, Tennessee 7. Because of four turnovers on the Tennessee side. These are the same teams. They're not dissimilar. It's worse if you don't wear your headphones. Oh, I promise.
I took off my headphones and then I could hear you louder is the problem. So I put them back on.
34-7. Kentucky is by far my favorite team in the SEC right now because Kentucky has mastered the art of trying less. They're just, what are they going to do? They're going to play defense. And they're going to put Terry Wilson out there. You know what Terry Wilson's going to do at quarterback? Not enough.
Not a enough. Goddamn thing.
Enough. That's the answer. Not a goddamn thing.
He's not going to throw 40-something times, that's for sure.
That's right. I'm now leaning firmly towards your quarterback throwing more is bad. In my old age, I'm becoming like, you know what happens when you pass the ball? You're not Kentucky. That's what happens. This is Eddie Grant's the MacGyver of Kentucky of offensive coordinators because somebody gave him a paperclip, some chewing gum, three batteries, and some string. And he's got to make an airplane out of it. And he's going to do it because somehow Kentucky keeps winning games despite having what I would charitably call less than nothing on offense. They also, by the way, dropped like two TDs in this game, so it could have been worse.
Well, also, within the first 20 minutes, Kentucky's defense had outscored Tennessee's offense for the entire game. So, really, at that point, like, I don't know what you need to do on offense.
Like, you know what? You know what we need to do? We need to get to 5 o'clock, boys. So we need to do, let's get to 5 o'clock. You know what? Do we have to go take 20 minutes in the bathroom while we check our phone? That's what we're going to have to do. Maybe we linger in the copy room a little longer than we have to, no problem. Does lunch creep over a little bit? Yeah. Are we going to play games on our phone at our desk? Sure. But we're going to get to 5 o'clock. We're going to make it through. That's Kentucky, man. Shouts out to Mark Stoops, by the way, for copying an open container on a bus. When somebody asked Mark Stoops if he was happy about the win, he said, yeah, I'm going to go on the bus and drink a glass of bourbon. Then I'm going to go home and smoke a cigar. And I was like, wow. That's Kentucky as hell when you're like, yeah, I'm cracking open a bottle on the bus. What you going to do about it, cop?
Are we sure that's illegal in Kentucky, though?
I really don't know.
Only if you don't share.
Did you bring enough for the whole bus?
You did? Oh, you are from Kentucky. Okay.
I'm like literally tapping a barrel with a straw. That's what I'm doing.
I just...
Y'all come up and get you a ladle of this courage.
It was not that long ago that Tennessee was contending with Georgia. Like, it wasn't. This is the meanest football team in the world to its fans. Just the meanest.
I tried to tell y'all.
Just the meanest. That's the other thing, is that Holly almost called the final margin in this game.
Tried on the to nose. Tell y'all.
Can I tell you, although Holly has gotten so good about bailing on the game and knowing exactly when to bail on the game with a frightening degree of accuracy.
I've had lots of practice.
It didn't even take a turnover. Like, I think just something happened. You go, nah, I'm out.
It was 0-0 when I quit and went back to my room.
You quit at 0-0.
It was 0-0 when I went back to my room to watch Baylor, West Virginia. And I had a lovely Saturday. I don't know about the rest of you assholes.
You made the right choice.
You mean Kansas, West Virginia? Because just want to emphasize that Gus Johnson...
Oh, was West Virginia playing against somebody?
I just want to go ahead and emphasize that Gus Johnson got to call a Kansas football game. Ha ha!
I'm going to say something. It was actually a really great defensive game by West Virginia, too. It was a lot of fun in a lot of different ways.
Can I tell you the best game I watched this week? Like, the best game. Like bar none, by far.
I see no way of preventing you.
I'm about to. Georgia State, Arkansas State, damn it. Thursday night, 59-52. Absolute lunacy on both sides of the ball. Yeah. It was absolutely phenomenal. I know our beloved Georgia State Panthers could not pull out the win against the Red Wolves, but damn if the Sun Belt hasn't been the most entertaining. Like, second was Coastal Carolina.
But damn if Georgia State didn't get, like, all of Arkansas State's coaches fired. Arkansas State's out here dropping co-defensive coordinators because of what the Panthers did.
Yeah. In the loss. That's how you know you're a good football team. You get people fired even when you beat them. That's amazing. But yeah, Sun Belt, by the way, that's it. 2020's taught us that the Sun Belt is by far the best value buy in college football because I haven't watched many bad Sun Belt games. I've watched bad SEC games, non-competitive SEC games, but I don't think I've watched a bad Sun Belt game this year.
That's an amazing statement.
It is, but it's completely accurate.
I know. I have no issue with it. Can we? We don't have to do this for long, I promise. I do feel like we are obligated to talk about the Noles.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, it's fair.
That's a football team.
That is correct. And
that we just saw recently in a home field apparel drop.
That is correct as well. Here is my takeaway from Florida State upsetting number 5, UNC, for their first win against an FBS team this year. Florida State didn't actually look that good in this game. They didn't win the turnover battle. That was tied. They didn't win the penalty battle. They lost that pretty easily. They only completed 42% of their passes. They weren't very good on third down. They were, like, pretty so-so in the red zone. They only scored 17 points on 5 trips. They had, like, an up-and-down special teams night. Missed 2 field goals. They did block a punt. And they still won. And I think, like, even though everything I just said sounds, like, negative or depressing or whatever, I think that's actually a good thing. Because for Florida State to be able to turn in a inconsistent, not by no means was this like, wow, Florida State firing on all cylinders on both sides of the ball. They did play pretty well defensively, I will say. And to still get a win against a team that, whether it makes sense or not, was undefeated and was ranked very highly, like, that's actually probably a more meaningful first step for Florida State starting to rebuild or starting to turn it around, then coming out and doing the everything went according to plan. Because, like, it's just, you can't rely on that if you are FSU right now at this point to play that game every week. So you should probably be happy with some things improved and the football gods didn't hate us for once. They hated UNC, and they really hated UNC at the end of that game.
I don't really understand. Like, I did not watch this game.
Yeah.
Looking at the numbers, I do not understand how this happened.
I was gonna,
which part?
I'm
any of it.
Okay.
I'm really glad to hear you say that because I called the Tennessee-Kentucky game within a field goal, and I distinctly remember turning to you before UNC Florida State and saying, Mac's going to hang 50 on these people. Like, I can't remember the last time I thought a game was going to be this much of a blowout in one direction, and I was this wrong in the other direction.
Okay, so I'll tell you straight up, turnovers, it's 1-1, right?
Yep.
So it wasn't like there was a huge advantage there. Penalties, it's like 50, 89 yards. There's not a massive number in penalties.
No, the only reason I'm still thinking about this is because I thought UNC was going to blow their brakes off.
UNC outgained them by over 100 yards. They had 11 more first downs. They Sam Howell had a pretty good game, man. Like, this looks clean. It's like,
so a lot of it is that Florida State jumped out to a 24-point lead, 24-0 lead, and they obviously didn't, like, score a lot more as the game went on, but they did, to some extent, kind of park the bus. They also had some dumb, like, both of the field goals they missed were, like, 33, 35 yards, something like that. But, like, if you go back and look through this game, every time there was, like, that little thing where it's like, okay, if UNC can just do that, if they can just convert this, like, 4th-and-1, or if they can just pick up this, like, 3rd-and-3, they'll continue the drive and get the touchdown that will sort of, like, open the floodgates. And every time they hit one of those points, pretty much until the end of the game when they started coming back, it went, like, terribly wrong. They went 0-for-3 on 4th-down in this game. And the last one was their last play on offense. But the other two were, like, short yarded situations where they could have converted. They were fucking terrible on 3rd down. On 3rd down, they converted a 3rd-and-1 and a 3rd-and-2. And that was it. That was the only offensive conversions they had on third down all night. They like, and like I'm saying, when they didn't convert, it wasn't just like, oh, third and five, threw an incompletion. It was, oh, third and five, got sacked and lost 15 yards. Like, this was such a like in the margins game. And like, have you ever seen somebody just go on a terrible streak at blackjack where you're just like every time, every hand right. Yeah, exactly. You've played every hand right, but just the dealer kept kicking your ass. That was kind of what happened to UNC.
Right. Ryan, I think your statistical analysis, this is good. This is informative. But I think if I could pick out a single number from this box score that I think would spell victory here, FSU threw 19 passes, and that is almost half as many as UNC threw.
That's so true.
As we've learned, passing is bad.
Passing is bad and stupid. Why would you do it?
FSU managed to avoid it. In fact, FSU really didn't do anything on offense. It looks like they didn't even have the ball. Like, UNC threw 36 passes, ran 45 times, and FSU ran 36 times and passed 19 times. So does UNC had the ball the entire time and nothing happened?
Yeah, pretty much.
You can't make a mistake on offense if you don't have the ball.
Smart.
Play smarter, not harder.
Also,
like Kentucky.
Yeah. Also, the Noles, it looks like every time the Noles got the ball, they broke a big play. 54, 58, 39, 36. Like, get ball, do something with it. Whereas UNC,
but just one thing. Just do one thing with it. That's it. Exactly. You don't get to do more than one thing.
Then get your defense back on the field.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
so they can take a long time to get the ball away from the offense and stop them on. They go 2 for 12 on third down.
Yeah.
That is bad blackjack, man. That's nasty.
Between this game and Notre Dame Louisville, which I will only remark upon by saying the winning team, Notre Dame, scored 12 points. I have a very hard time seeing how like anybody else in this conference is going to be a meaningful threat to Clemson, who I don't even think we've talked about Clemson much on the show this season at all. Clemson continues to look like an absolute murder machine. And I just don't, you know, they already beat Miami, and that didn't look that hard. I don't see how anybody else left on the schedule or in the conference championship game is, like, even going to slow them down at this point. Like, the punter came in and started throwing passes on Georgia Tech?
To Dabo's sons?
Yeah, like, yeah.
So this week, they are 44.5-point favorites against Syracuse.
Oh, God.
And I'm not sure that number.
That game doesn't have to happen.
That number's not attractive, really.
Can you?
I like big numbers, but
the running clock.
Why do we need to do this? What is there a single reason we need to play this game? No.
For normalcy.
I guess Clemson's punter could use some more throwing reps.
Sure.
Clemson, at one point, they swapped out their extra point kicker for their backup extra point kicker. They had this other dude kick like three extra points. Why are we doing this?
That's very gracious of you, Dabo. But good Lord,
it is funny because people reflexively were like, who clearly didn't watch the game, were like, oh, 73-7. They ran up the score, and it's like, no, they really tried to like if you had driven to the game and said, hey, can I play? They probably would have put you in for a few snaps at linebacker.
Four different Tigers threw passes.
Yeah.
10 ran the ball. I'm not even going to count, but it looks like 15 caught passes, including two different Swinnies. I didn't even know there were two Swinnies.
I didn't know there were two
multiple
of them on the team.
Well, he's not even a relative. We just took him because of the name.
I like this kid.
Am we not merciful?
There was. It looks like the backup punter got a rep. Oh no, no. Oh, I see what happened here. The backup kicker is also the backup punter. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
My God.
Can I give you? Clemson did something that is a rarity, but one of my favorite. You're not about this life moments. And this is when they told Georgia Tech that you are not about this life.
And Georgia Tech's like, no, no, we are not.
No, no, we would like to get to the end of this game.
We agree.
We did not claim to be.
They put up 30.
Asked and answered, counselor.
They put up 35 in the second quarter.
Now, here's the smart thing Georgia Tech did, all right? They threw only 14 passes. They got this shit over with. They ran the ball 44 times.
That's right. Brisk, baby.
Keep this clock moving.
We're on to something. We are
the single funniest screen grab, I'm going to go ahead and grab it, is Clemson's receiving totals versus Georgia Tech's. Yeah, Tech had four guys catch passes. Clemson had, it's got to be like 20.
They were mad at all of them. They're like, why are you catching that pass? Don't ever. Oh, my God. Clemson really did have, like, Clemson has an entire roster catching balls in this game. They have, oh, my God. They have guys. Lynn J. Dixon caught a pass. I'm going to spell Lynn J.'s name. LYN-J. That's how you spell. Lynn J. Dixon caught a pass because of Georgia Tech. The generosity.
So, I bet Jamie Lynn Sigler caught a pass.
Clemson's like notorious for emptying the bench, right? Like, this is sort of one of the things they do that kind of fucks with their advanced analytics is, like, as soon as they get any sort of a comfortable lead, they just start shuffling dudes in there. And it's one of the reasons they're so good late in the season, you know, because everyone's gotten some reps. This might be the most extreme example we've seen yet, and that includes the time they played, like, Charlotte.
Yeah.
So,
J.C. Chalk caught a pass.
What?
That's a fake name.
Yes, it is.
That's like the first, when you play Where in the World in Carmen Sandiego, that's like the first villain you have to catch.
This is like when you have to enter your name for setting a video game record and you start putting butt and ass.
I mean, is that the most video game name on here? Because there's a dude named Max May.
There's a guy named Frank Ladson.
What?
Frank Ladson Jr., who I swear played for Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, he's
at least
a transfer.
It's not hyphenated. I thought it was going to be like Lad-Son.
Yeah, multiple Swinneys. I mean, they could have gotten Grandma Swinney in on this.
I don't think I knew he had two sons that were college age. Are these middle schoolers? Did he put it? Are his kids in college?
If a middle school, like, yeah, I'm just going to go ahead
this
and start.
Is why the ACC is so against rushing the field, because coaches' kids keep trying to play Georgia Tech.
I'm going to go ahead and start spreading the rumor that a middle schooler caught a pass for a completion against Georgia Tech. In
yeah,
the
Lane offered him as a preschooler, but, you know, he really wanted the sense of family that he got at Clemson.
There's the, like, ghost of Cumberland College just in Dabo Swinney's ear, like, make him bleed. Do it.
And John Heisman's like, yeah, do it.
I would like to shout out Memphis. I mean, just
generally,
theory.
Not even for
generally.
Football.
Yeah, I think the same.
Just you know, shouts out to Memphis as a city, as the beautiful land. Like Memphis is.
Shout out to Central Barbecue.
Shout out to Zach Rudolph, who caught a pass for Clemson on Saturday night.
Shout out to the pilot where I saw a girl who was probably 9 years old carrying a handgun. Yeah, shout out to Memphis. It's a true story. I'll share it with you someday when it's less traumatic
to
me.
Okay.
Grandma carry my gun. Things you would only see in the greater Memphis metropolitan area. Memphis finally... You know the last time Memphis beat UCF was? The last time?
Like, probably been like 5 years, 6 years.
That's not close.
Okay, thanks.
At all? Yeah, no. Let's
eat shit, Ryan.
Yeah, let's
just
go ahead.
Say it then. I don't know.
You idiot. How dare you not know this? The last time Memphis
Ryan,
beat...
you were fired as Memphis's SID.
Yeah, that's it. You've lost
I didn't
it.
Know it. I didn't know I was on Split Zone Duo now. Shit.
Yeah, you probably got confused because we were talking about college football.
The betrayer does not know his American Athletic Conference history.
On September 22nd, 1990, Memphis beat Central Florida 37-28. 1990. They didn't play again until 2005. And when they did play, it's a continuous string of Central Florida beatdowns of Memphis, which I cannot think of a more Memphisian thing than goddamn them Orlandoans.
Memphisian, please.
Memphisians.
Let's have the Elysian.
Were they still Memphis State at that point, or had they made the switch?
05, they had, 05, they had gone ahead and, I think, fully changed. In 1990, they're Memphis State.
Memphis State Tigers.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2005, they are the Memphis Tigers, but the results are straight L's every year from 2005 to 2018.
Okay.
So this is a big deal.
You can, by the way, get Memphis State era Tigers t-shirts from Home Field Apparel because I have two.
So 1990, you said, was the last one?
That is the last time. Then they don't play for 15 years. And then when they are both in Conference USA from 2005 all the way up to 2019, straight losses.
I like how that made you hit the O.
Also, they made up for some missing time here because this also includes two AAC title games. So Memphis was getting itself a double dose of losing to UCF. There's a lot. There's a lot being taken out in this 50-49 victory by the Tigers.
Also, 1990 UCF, it's only the 12th year the program even exists, and it's their first year jumping not from FCS to FBS, but from Division II to FCS.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's been, if you want to know about two teams who have been on journeys, roads,
Spencer
travels.
Was 24 when this game happened.
That's not possible.
That's how long ago it was.
It's not that far off.
It's really not. Thank you, Ryan. I'm going to go cry now.
You stabbed me first,
you
ass.
You haven't cried since you killed
me. I did. I'm ready. How dare you stab an old man? Stab, stab, stab. I'm just looking vulnerable.
Ryan, you're really learning from Nashville, and I'm proud of you.
But shouts out to Memphis for finally vanquishing a foe that they had taken years, like over a decade, to finally win and beat them by. The points don't matter. 50-49. The margin of victory is irrelevant. They managed to, anytime that you manage to defeat UCF, frankly, you're doing a service for civilization. So thank you, Memphis.
This is, okay. Maybe this is my own Google results going crazy. But the first news result I get when I put in UCF football is from the New York Post. And it says, UCF kicker has altercation with teammate after missing game winner.
Oh, yeah, that was on TV.
Wow.
Yeah, like the kicker missed the game winner.
Yeah, the cameras caught that, actually.
Yeah, and when he missed it...
He punched the injury tent several times.
Yeah, take that injury tent, the tent with
which... Yeah, I love a good visual metaphor, but...
I'm going to mess up the injury tent. It's called the injury tent because I'm supposed to injure it.
I will defeat death by destroying this injury tent.
But from what we saw on the cameras, I would characterize this as scuffle.
Sure.
Yeah, it wasn't a full-on brawl.
It wasn't a fracas, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think anybody threw a punch. It was just, you know, an altercation. Things getting heated.
Nobody threw a punch because from what we saw on television, there were teammates at the ready holding both parties back with a quickness. So I don't know what happened before the cameras caught it, but...
Yeah, the last thing I would like to mention, because we've talked about Zach Wilson being the swaggiest white boy on the planet for BYU and them being real good. They did play Houston, and Houston did something I have never seen before. Like, that's rare. It's rare that, you know, because as Ryan pointed out, I've been watching football for 70 years. And I've seen a lot of things. But
just like Larry King.
just me and Larry King chilling, watching 1966 Michigan State going, hey, Lair Bear, this is incredible. Yes, it is. Have you met my ninth wife?
Do you know anyone who's ever been murdered?
I got murdered once.
Jerry Lewis is coming over.
What? Are those connected?
Just remember that Larry King, when asked to tell an inspirational story about his life, told the story about the time he bet the last $10 he had at the track, hit like a crazy trifecta, and managed to pay his alimony for the next year off that.
Jesus.
Well, yeah. It was in one of those Parade magazine things, like, talk about a time, you know, that was like a really crucial moment in your life. And this Parade magazine had 15 softball stories from celebrities that were probably written by their PR people that were about, like, when I got my cancer diagnosis and I overcame that, or when I, you know, was stranded out in the woods and I figured it out, or when I had to be there for my mother and I really showed up, you know, like all of these very standard tales of personal growth and endurance. And then I remember reading, it was like Larry King. And even as a kid, I thought, well, my eyebrows popped up because I knew Larry King was insane because he was on TV every night. You have to be insane to be on TV every night. So I read it, and Larry King is talking about it. He goes, so here's the most important moment in my life. It's my third marriage is just falling apart. I've just lost my job at WFAN or whatever horrible radio station he was working for in New York. You know, I've been kicked out of my apartment. I'm staying in some dive up in Queens. And me, I got like $20 left. So I did what any man would. I took it to the track. And I'm reading it. I'm like, Larry King took it to the track.
It worked.
Yeah, I took it to the track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a solutions-oriented thinker.
And
Memphis
I remember
football.
I remember in the story, Larry gave great detail about the exact bet that he put down at the track that indicated that Larry had spent far too much time at the track and was far too, you know, when somebody like lays down real dollars about horse racing, you make assumption about their life like, oh, you have a gambling problem, a serious debilitating gambling problem. But Larry laid out all the details of the bet and he goes, and I hit on that and I hit on the four at Santa Anita. And I made enough money to pay off my rent for a year and my alimony for a year. And that was the most, and I have a nice steak dinner at Morton's. That was the most important night of my life. And I'm like, Larry King, you are a wild boy. No man is wilder than you.
So he's describing this night at the track, like that thing where if you ask LeBron, like, you know, in the 11th minute of the first quarter, this guy took a step one way and he explains for like 5 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. And Larry King, like, 60 years later, photographic memory of of that special night.
Of the time he went to the track and found himself a place to live and also a way to not get arrested for failure to pay child support for a whole year. That was the most important moment in Larry King's life, is when he hit a huge bet at the track and got to go home by himself to his flophouse apartment. Like, ah! Life's good. Awe-inspiring masculinity, Larry King. Well done.
Clean living is its own reward.
Like, dude, I think dude got divorced going into his 80s. That's ambition. God damn, Larry.
How many are we up to now? How many is it?
He's had 8 wives, I believe.
God damn.
Yeah. It's positively biblical.
What is the record for a divorce?
8. Not, I'm just, I mean, going 8.
like you could have, like, you know, many, many spouses, but having many divorces is the that's the thing.
Oh, Larry King just loves getting divorced.
I have an answer to this. Glenn Wolfe, also known as Scotty Wolfe, was a Baptist minister in California who held the record he died. Who held the record for the largest number of monogamous marriages with 29.
So that's at least 28 divorces then?
Well, yeah. Three of his marriages were to women he had previously divorced as well. So
now, are any of those like out of order? Because like Larry has one, Aileen Akins, where it's a marriage. Oh, yes, he did it. So Aileen Akins married 61, divorced 63. Then there's another 63 to 67. Immediately back with Aileen, 67, divorced in 72.
Yep.
So I love when it's like when the it's like fucking Mac Brown, right?
What?
Two stints at the same school, right?
Out of context.
Just making Larry King married Mac Brown. So what?
He's a very tender lover.
I just like the multiple stints with the same guy bracketing. Mm-hmm. An entire other marriage.
Yep.
It's not like they split and got back together, right? There was an entire other marriage in the middle.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so many trips to the track.
Those were the Charlene years.
There's a Sharon on here. There's a Frida, an Annette, Aileen, Mickey, Sharon, Julie, and Sean.
This is my favorite DMX song.
I married DMX in 1998.
I think Lou Bega's a coward.
I love Earl. Always will. I have three beautiful children. Their names are Rourke and Rourke and Rourke.